Today, New Zealand property, away with the fairies. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. The latest data from the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand showed that the number of residential properties sold last November across New Zealand increased by a massive 29.6% from the same number last year, from 7,627 to 9,885, and that's the highest number of properties sold in 164 months, right back to March 2007, and the highest November sales count since November 2006, which is 14 years. For New Zealand, excluding Auckland, the number of properties sold increased by 18.3% compared to the same time last year, from 5,205 to 6,157, and that's the highest number of properties sold since March 2016, which is 56 months, and the highest November sales volume since November 2006, which is 14 years. And in Auckland, the number of properties sold in November increased by 53.9% year on year, from 2,422 to 3,728, and that's the highest since March 2007, or 164 months, and the highest November sales volume since records began. In addition to Auckland, regions with the largest increase in annual sales volumes during November were the West Coast, up 74.4% from just 43 to 75, with 32 more houses. And that's the highest since March 2004. Northland, up 36.1% from 219 to 298, or 79 more houses. And that's the highest since June 2016. Canterbury, up 31.7% from 1,012 to 1,333, or 321 more houses. And that's the highest since March 2007. The Bay of Plenty, up 29.5% from 498 to 645, or 147 more houses. And that's the highest since May 2016. Nelson, up 25.8%. from 93 to 117, which is 24 more houses, and that's the highest for the month of November in 18 years. Waikato, up 21.9% from 828 to 1009, or 181 more houses, and that's the highest since September 2015. Regions with annual decreases in sales volumes were Marlborough, down 5.3% from 95 to 90, down 5. That's the lowest for the month of November in 3 years. Gisborne, from 70 to 67, three fewer houses, the lowest in 3 years. And Hawke's Bay, down 1.8% from 275 to 275 fewer houses, the lowest for the month of November in 3 years. Now, Bindi Normwell, Chief Executive REINZ, said November was an incredible month in terms of the number of properties sold, with just shy of 10,000 properties sold over 30 days at 9,885. The last time we saw a similar level of sales volumes was back in March 2007, 164 months ago, before the national recession and the global financial crisis started impacting New Zealand property markets. November saw more than half, 10 out of 16 of the regions across the country, with double-digit percentage increases in annual sales volumes, showing how buoyant the market is. Part of this is likely to be attributed to people wanting to purchase property ahead of Christmas, partly due to the Reserve Bank announcing in early November that it would undertake a consultation in December to reintroduce LVRs earlier than planned, but also due to this underlying fear that prices might increase even further in the coming months. For 3 months now in a row, Auckland sales volumes have been up by more than 50% when compared with the same time last year. And with a 45.8% increase in new listings in November, there are few signs of the usual Christmas slowdown. It will be interesting to see how long these high sales volumes can be sustained, she said. Now, interestingly, there was an article in the Financial Times and replicated in the AFR, which said that New Zealand's housing crisis poses a big test for Jacinda Ardern. More than 3 years after Jacinda Ardern was first elected Prime Minister on a platform of tackling the housing crisis and inequality, many experts say the situation has only become worse. Certainly, rents are very high, and there is not enough social housing to meet soaring demand. More than 3 years after elected Prime Minister on a platform of tackling the housing crisis and inequality, many experts say the situation's only become worse. We've probably seen the biggest widening of wealth distribution that we've ever seen in New Zealand between people who own houses and those who don't, said Arthur Grimes, Professor of Public Policy at Victoria University of Wellington. Ms Ardern, of course, received popular support following her adroit handling of the coronavirus pandemic and other crises, but analysts warn a failure to deliver on earlier promises could alienate voters. The Labour government came in fully intending to build houses. I'm not sure if it was naivety, but it just hasn't happened, said Jan Rutledge, general manager of DePaul House, an emergency housing service in Auckland. New Zealand's social housing waiting list has more than tripled to 21,415 since the 2017 election, and rental prices have continued to outpace wages growth, with median rents climbing by 30% since 2015. The homelessness rate is the highest in the OECD, although definitions of homelessness do vary among the 37-member Club of Wealthy Nations. House prices surged more than 20% in the 12 months to the end of October, when the median cost of a home in Auckland passed $1 million New Zealand dollars for the first time, according to the Real Estate Institute of New Zealand. Record low interest rates, a housing supply crunch, and an economic rebound following the nation's success suppressing COVID-19 have fueled the increase, says analysts. Recent census data shows that home ownership rates fell to a 70-year low of 64.5% in 2018, with more than half of new mortgage holders in Auckland in 2020 borrowing more than five times their incomes. Last year, Grant Robinson, New Zealand's finance minister, requested that the Reserve Bank of New Zealand change the objective of its monetary policy mandate to include house prices as the economy grapples with soaring prices and the risks of a property bubble. In a letter to Adrian Orr at the Reserve Bank, Robinson stated that housing price instability is harmful to our aims of reducing inequality and poverty, and it is also likely to negatively impact the government's aim of creating a more productive and inclusive economy. It's always nice to get mail, the governor said. This speech, by the way, is not the response. We're working on that as we speak, Mr. Orr was delivering the virtual 2020 Sir Leslie Melville lecture, hosted by Canberra's ANU quite recently. New Zealand had a historic housing undersupply, previously strong immigration on top of the new challenger COVID-19, and this fear of missing out. And New Zealand's home owner age group has performed financially better than young people. Demand for housing is strong because people are staying home or have returned home, and these are new additional aspects around unraveling this, he said. Think beyond the pandemic. Mr. Orr thinks global policymakers will want to see the whites of the eyes of the labour market to ensure jobs are sufficiently safe before they walk back the incredibly stimulatory reaction to COVID-19. Mr. Orr thinks that the labour market will invite central banks to keep policy easy for longer, irrespective of whether they have a single or dual mandate. This concept of what I would call maximum sustainable employment in our remit is a complex measure and is content specific. Least regret is a phrase that he referred to. Doing too much too soon was better than doing too little too late. New Zealand's cash rate is 0.25%, and Mr. Orr has learnt from economic history that you do not want an economic shock to become a credit crunch. So that underpinned the swift response. Our actions have been successful to date, touch wood, Mr. Orr said, as the economy has averted deflation, the New Zealand dollar was lower than it would have otherwise been, and financial stability is sound. This is very good. The real challenge is to stay focused, and starting with very low nominal interest rates meant considering new or alternative tools when COVID-19 demanded a monetary response. However, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand asked financial institutions to be operationally ready for negative interest rates in case they were deployed, although that would have contradicted the RBNZ's own forward guidance. Whether we ever do this or not will always be data dependent, he said. Later, Mr. Orr said, we all understand what negative rates can do. We all have significant and healthy skepticism about how effective it could be, but it would remain a tool under consideration. The Reserve Bank, of course, is doing quantitative easing, which has been very effective, they said, in flattening the yield curve and lowering borrowing costs for New Zealanders. More recently, to supplement this quantitative easing program, they've also moved into where Australia and the RBA started from, and that was the Funding for Lending program, a version of the RBA's term funding facility. There will always be a limit on RBNZ QE, he added, unlike monetary financing. The balance of global risks is still leaning to the downside, the governor said. Redeploying labour has become a challenge as skill shortages emerge in some areas at the same time as unemployment has increased. You cannot just suddenly match the two, he said. Higher unemployment and skill shortages will continue until international borders reopen. In the first and second quarters of 2021, it's going to be quiet without the seasonal influx of arrivals, he said. And New Zealand's wage subsidy scheme was highly effective in protecting the labour market, and helpfully commodity prices have stayed high. They're loving New Zealand's wine and cheese, he said. As long as this COVID-19 virus remains on the move, it's not yet over. Adrian Orr asked the government to hand the central bank the power to set debt-to-income limits on mortgage lending, a tool which would ease prices but would make it even more difficult for first-time buyers. Now, Professor Grimes said low interest rates and stimulus were short-term drivers of the crisis, but longer-term challenges such as insufficient housing construction and high immigration had not been adequately addressed. Planning regulations in most cities are strict, and it's hard to get land released, which makes it costly to develop new houses. In addition, successive governments of both main parties have balked at introducing land taxes or capital gains taxes for fear of alienating middle-class voters. Planners run the show, and they don't really think about the economics of what they're doing, Professor Grimes said. Musardin's Labour Party has rejected calls from the Greens, its coalition partner, to take more radical action to cool house prices, including comprehensive tax changes. The Prime Minister has even suggested that the public bears some responsibility, noting her government has attempted to introduce tax measures such as capital gains tax, but gained little public support. The appetite for some of these policies also needs to come from the public, she said. And Finance Minister Grant Robertson defended the government's stance, saying Labour had inherited the housing crisis and it was always clear it would take longer than a single term to fix it. However, flagship initiatives such as the Kiwi Build policy have failed to meet expectations. The $2 billion New Zealand dollar scheme was launched in 2017 to build 100,000 affordable homes within a decade for first-time buyers, but the target was abandoned within 18 months and the scheme reset because of poor take-up and the need to pursue alternatives focused on low-income families, including rent-to-buy. In fact, just 602 homes were delivered by August 2020. Clearly, the place the housing market was at didn't perform to the expectations, Mr. Robertson said, but we have reset this and are working closely with developers and others to see mixed development taking place and to build new partnerships. That includes demand-side measures such as banning foreign buyers and requiring investors to pay capital gains tax on properties sold within 5 years of acquiring them. The coalition is building more houses than any government since the 1970s, he added, noting a target to build 6,400 social homes by 2022. For the 39 families living in emergency housing at DePaul House, a solution cannot come fast enough. Analysts say the same is true for Miss Arden's Labour Party, which will face voters again within 3 years, and this time may be punished for failing to deliver. And according to CoreLogic, the New Zealand property market has shown no signs of letting up through the final month of the year, December, with near record growth registered across the country, according to the CoreLogic Index. Their house price index for December shows nationwide property values continue to accelerate over the month, increasing by 2.6%, and that takes the growth in the final quarter of the year to 6.1%, a rate not bettered since the 3 months ending February 2004, which was 6.6%. In Tauranga, the quarterly rate of growth exceeded 10%, actually 10.2%, which is an extraordinary figure and something last seen in May 2004, which was 10.5%, when the average property price value there was just over $350,000. The average value now is more than $876,000, up from less than $800,000 at the end of September 2020. The quarterly rate of growth in Masterton is yet another step higher at 17.4%. while other provincial centres exceeded 10%, including Gisborne at 10.4% and Palmerston North at just 9.6%. Looking back to the start of the year, property values in Gisborne have increased by more than 30%, at 30.4% in fact, which has seen the average price increase in value by more than $120,000 to smash the $500,000 mark at $514,212. The factors influencing such a rapid rate of capital gain include record low mortgage rates and tighter inventory, which has seen demand outweigh supply. Stronger than forecast economic conditions have buoyed consumer sentiment at a time of unprecedented global uncertainty. And it's clear, they said, that New Zealanders are looking towards property as a safe investment and the most attractive asset for wealth accumulation. Furthermore, areas with a lower average value typically mean a greater number of eligible buyers and hence greater competition leading to stronger growth. With consistent messages regarding the need to protect the wealth coming from both the government and the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, the risk factor of property investment has, on the face of it, they say, reduced, which only encourages greater investment. Without any major policy change regarding property in the works, the long-term affordability of the property market is reliant on significantly increasing supply, which is a slow-moving factor. So for now, all indications are that the fervent growth in property values will continue throughout the summer at least, said CoreLogic. Now, there are just three quick points to highlight. Firstly, clearly very low interest rates have stoked demand significantly, and the risk factors in terms of high loan-to-value and loan-to-income ratios are clearly there, so I do expect the Reserve Bank of New Zealand to move. Secondly, I think the supply issue is being overdone. There is plenty of new building and there is plenty of property still vacant. But thirdly, this does underscore the complete policy failure, which of course is mirrored also in Australia, that property has become the go-to asset class, that both banks, the government, and of course property holders don't want to see property prices slide, and the wealth effect of positive price moves is also being encouraged in the context of higher unemployment and continued risk with the virus. So this, I think, underscores once again the short-sightedness of the property strategy and the mortgage lending strategy that's been executed both in Australia and New Zealand for many years, And I suspect that nothing will change dramatically. And as a result of that, there is probably more upside for some from property. But of course, the cost of getting into the market is ever harder. Affordability is ever tighter. And therefore, the proportion of households who own their property outright, or even own them with a mortgage, will probably continue to decline. And that will put more pressure on the rental sector. There is a difference, though, between Australia and New Zealand, insofar that in Australia, rents are definitely falling in the major centres. In New Zealand, it doesn't seem to be the case at the moment, although that may change ahead. So, my conclusion is, the property market in New Zealand is away with the fairies, and will continue in that vein for some time yet. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.